Can you hear me?
Yep.
So, Sean, would you consider yourself a Mac guy or a PC guy?
Well, nowadays I consider myself more of a PC guy. You know, I do all my editing work on PC. I'm recording this podcast on a PC. You know, although I do own an iPhone and a MacBook.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. It's strange that you mention editing as being your reason for using a PC, because it's usually the other way around.
I didn't say it was my reason. It was just I had PCs to begin with, and I got editing software for PCs. And, you know, kind of once you start with something, it's hard to deviate and switch all your stuff over.
It's true. It's true. I was a PC guy, too. I made the switch a number of years back.
Yes, yes.
You know what actually prompted me to make the switch?
What's that?
It's that I decided I wasn't a PC gamer anymore.
Oh, really?
Well, because I had PCs all before that, and there's that the upgrade cycle. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
You know, having to add to the graphics card or add more RAM, or you know, just to make sure things run. I mean, consoles are the same way. You know, you've got an upgrade cycle there too. But it seemed like for the price of the PC upgrade cycle, like I could get a console.
Sure.
That would run everything that had its logo on it. You know what I mean?
That seems reasonable.
Like if you get a PlayStation 3, you know, it's going to play every game that says PlayStation 3 on it, you know?
Right, right.
I guess. all these add-ons and things, you know, with Move and Kinect and the 32X.
I don't know what you mean. Disk system. Yeah,
exactly. I guess that's not totally true, but I mean, for the most part, you know.
Right.
When you get hardware, you can assume that stuff's going to work on it.
Yeah.
I was like, my major in college was video production. Everyone's like, you should get a Mac. You should get a Mac. You know, that stuff. That's what you should do stuff on it. I'm like, I'm going to use Adobe Premiere instead. And I used that for a while. And then I finally like used Final Cut, and I'm like, oh, yes, this is what I should do for my professional stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't really play games on computers anymore. I'm a console gamer now. I finally like decided. I don't know. Have I missed much?
Well, you know, I played Doom and Quake and Duke Nukem 3D.
I was there for those. I was there for those. I switched around 98.
I've been playing Civ, but I think that you can play that on a Mac.
Yeah,
because you know, thanks to Steam.
Steam. Steam is nice. I like Steam. I mostly have indie games and Portal with it, but I mean.
Well, you're kind of talking to the wrong guy, because I haven't really been much of a PC gamer myself, to be honest. I've been more of a console person. Although, interestingly enough, my first gaming machine was a PC, or more specifically, an Apple II.
Oh.
Even more specifically, an Apple IIe.
Ah, the Apple IIe. I had an Apple IIe compatible.
Okay.
It was called the Laser 128.
Interesting.
It was actually probably closer to an Apple IIc because the stock memory was 128K, which seems like no memory at all. Oh, my gosh. How did we get by? Anyway.
I'm not really sure.
I mean, I'm not that old.
Floppy drives have more memory than that.
That just seems... Oh, I can't even believe that. But anyway, I guess I don't think it was my favorite. I don't think it was my first, though. I think I had the Nintendo before. I don't remember which came first at this point. Maybe it was the computer. They were around the same time.
I seem to recall when we first got it, we had that pea soup green monitor with the really bad draw. Well, not really draw. It's just like the refresh rate was really really low. and you could see like the ghosts of the previous frame on there for a few seconds afterward. And in fact, I found out later was basically just like a basic AV video input signal, so that I hooked up like a VCR or like our camcorder to it and played things off of it, and I was like, oh, it's just monochrome green, and it's more the capability of the Apple that led to the graphics I was used to. So you imagine my surprise when I played Ghostbusters for the first time on like a color monitor. That was pretty rad.
Well, with our computer before, my parents were trying to do this for the most economical way possible.
Yeah.
So for I don't know the first few months we had it, we hooked it up to a television actually.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. That's totally doable.
Because it was capable of doing that, but the resolution was pretty bad. So when we tried to like do something like word processing, it was really hard to read the text. But it worked fine for games.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, you can still do that to a certain extent. You can hook most computers up to a TV if you have the right kind of cable.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Although these days, it's it's funny nowadays. Computers have better resolution than televisions, even the HD sets.
Oh yeah.
So that's kind of a fun reversal.
I think they did back then too, actually.
Maybe. I mean, I think TVs technically are always had that like 640 by 480 ish type. Resolution.
Maybe it just didn't look right. I don't know.
Yeah.
I know like the default for Commodore 64 is a lot of people hooked them up to TVs. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, right.
And then you didn't lose any resolution on that. Although I liked the Commodore 64 monitor. You know what I'm, do you know?
No, I didn't have one.
Brown box. Yeah.
Okay.
I still occasionally see people using those as monitors in like television studios. It's weird.
Yeah, I wonder if people are like curious as to why we're talking finally about these old computers. It's like why didn't you get an NES or something like that? I mean, I have an answer for my for me, but what about you?
What about me? Well, I mean, the computer was neat because it could do a lot of the things that an NES couldn't. Like, I don't know, there were a lot of like fairly deep games on it, like strategy war game type things like that, text adventures that I used to play on it, but I think the main reason why I got so into the computer gaming was because I could get games for like $5.
Right.
I would go down to Prangyway or like Target or whatever and pick up one of these box pieces of software. And at the time, the big box stores, like Kmart and stuff, they didn't want to alienate anybody. So a lot of those software packages had like Commodore, IBM, and Apple versions in one box.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Do you remember? Maybe not. But
what the heck's a Prangyway anyway?
it went out of business a long time ago. Okay. I don't know. It was maybe it was only a Wisconsin chain. I'm not sure.
Well, I lived in Eau Claire at the time, so it just maybe just didn't make it that far. Or maybe it didn't. I just didn't know because I was too young to know. I don't know.
I think the chain went out of business in like 92 or something.
That's crazy.
But it was like a Kmart or a Shopko,
Okay.
And I remember, but I bought a lot of really bad software, though, because I'm like, oh, I really liked the television show Elf. I'm sure this would make a good
I love that Elf game.
Maze game.
Will you catch cats? Oh, man, that's great.
Was it? I don't know. You might be thinking of the Master System game, which was actually pretty good.
I have the Master System game. It's a side-scroller. Okay. No, the maze game is you're running around trying to catch these four cats in that map area that have gotten loose
and bringing them back to your
hut. And then Willy is around, just like a floating head trying to catch you the entire time.
Yep. I do remember that.
Yes.
The sound those cats made. The game was made by Box Office Software, which made a lot of games that were $5. They had made a Jaws game too, and
that's crazy.
But anyway, what was amazing was I had a friend who had a Commodore 64, and I had another friend who had a PC. So like when I'd buy the software, and I'd give the PC or Commodore versions to them,
mm-hmm.
and in return, when they bought software, they'd give the Apple version to me.
Mm.
It's kind of interesting. There's nothing really quite like that. I guess you could say kind of like the Blu-ray DVD multi-packs that they have now.
Sure, sure.
Like theoretically you could do that, but I mean, I don't know. But I really love that. So what was your reason?
Yeah, so my reason was Nintendo didn't exist yet, or at least it didn't exist yet in the States. I don't recall when my dad first brought me to the Apple IIe to play some games like Jumpman. I think that's like my earliest memory of playing a video game. But it was like 1983, 1984, and you know, the NES didn't even come out in the States until 85. I don't think we didn't get our own until 88 or 89, somewhere around there. And I didn't even play one until like 86, I want to say. So like, you know, for a good 2 or 3 years, you know, while I was watching He-Man and Transformers, I was playing the Apple II.
You got any games you specifically remember?
Oh yeah. Aside from Jumpman, Congo River, Choplifter, which I picked up,
Choplifter.
I grabbed a Famicom version of that when I was over in Japan for Tokyo Game Show. In that
kind of bluish bin. Green cart, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I already had the Master System version. I was just so happy to find a copy of Choplifter, and it's just it was so different. Like, the graphical capabilities of both those systems was just so beyond what the Apple II could do that, you know, it was in color for one thing. But, like, you know, they were like really well-detailed
sprites.
Well, the
Apple II one was in color, too, if you would have had the correct monitor.
Okay, yeah. I just remember it being in green. So I don't recall what the colors are for Choplifter.
Yeah.
Does anyone even know Congo River? It was a weird one. Like, you're, like, on a raft or something. There's, like, various flotsam and jetsam, like, sharks and things floating by. Apple Cider, Spider, Frogger, which I didn't realize was an arcade game because I didn't really go to arcades when I was three. I don't even know. Yeah, Ghostbusters, as we mentioned before. Oh, Family Feud, Jeopardy. Yeah, there were lots of good things. Oh, Alf, of course. We mentioned Alf.
I don't know if we should mention that with the good things, but yeah.
Oh, I loved all of these games. And,
oh, yeah.
And so it was interesting switching to consoles, you know, because I had to use the family television. You know, before, you know, the Apple was in its own room, you know, away from the living room.
Yeah.
And I could just do that whenever I wanted to. But, you know, when you have the NES, you know, until my dad figured out the thing had AV outs and I could play it in the same room on the same monitor that I played my Apple II games on. That's a little bit of crossover for you there. that's kind of what I had to do when we would rent one until we were actually able to finally buy one. Years later.
Yeah, we did the renting thing first too.
Oh, those are the days you like go to the grocery store and you'd like rent like tapes, VHS tapes and NES games.
There's this great line in Sam and Max, one of the episodes, and they go, "Oh, there's our VCR. Yeah, we bought it at the supermarket. Oh, so you know it's a good one."
Right?
Yeah, I remember all that. But the supermarkets also sold Apple II software. Like, in the magazine section, they had those little discs that were, like, hanging up there. Again, $5 games.
Yeah, I was a little too young to buy games myself. You know, I was like three. So, there was stuff that I, you know, my dad would get. And sometimes he'd get it for me. Sometimes he'd get it for himself. So, like, when a game like Castle Smurfenstein comes along, which is a takeoff of Castle Wolfenstein, you know, I wasn't sure if it was something he bought or like got like a copy of somewhere, or, you know, if like one of his friends programmed it, because, you know, he's a tech guy and knows a lot of tech people. So it's really hard for me to know, you know, what I had that was commercially available and what wasn't. So, I mean, have you heard of Castle Smurfenstein?
I have not, but now I'm going to have to look it up. Because, yeah. I mean, the original Castle Wolfenstein, like before it was Wolfenstein 3D. Yeah, that was one of the. I don't know. I'd say that was one of the first stealthy type games.
Yeah, and it was interesting because, you know, it's unlike a lot of games that were kind of like arcade based, and I think I've made this comment about like games like Zelda before. Like, you know, there were multiple screens to it. It wasn't just like one thing you stood on and like, you know, just like try to run around at Pac-Man style or something. You know, it actually like went around like trying to navigate a whole space.
You had to evade the Nazis too. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah, or the Smurfs.
Okay, I suppose you had the Smurfs. Yeah. Okay, we now I really need to play this game.
Yeah, we had both copies, so I was able to play both versions, but I preferred Castle Smurfenstein because who doesn't like to kill Smurfs?
I guess that's got to be a hack of some sort. I don't know. Let's look into this.
It's an official ish hack. I have notes in that Powit TV article I wrote. But you know, like the name of the designers in there and stuff, and we can add to the show notes for this too.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But one of the things that the Apple could do was sound sampling was not something that really had been done before because there was anything that could really play it back. But you know, they have the whole la 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 la, you know, just very really? Very crackly, like when the game started, and
instead of the random German messages.
Yes. Yes. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we should talk about why the computer had sound in the first place.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think that brings us to a much bigger and kind of sadder topic of why we're talking about Apple this week in the first place.
Yes.
Well, when we're recording this now, it's been about a week since Steve Jobs passed away.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't know. I guess it wasn't unexpected news. I mean, he's been sick for a long time.
But yeah, as soon as he stepped down as CEO, like I bet a bunch of people thought, oh, he knows he's too sick to continue and doesn't want to die while he's still, you know, working
well,
there.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it was just right after a keynote, and you know, and they had the reserved seat for Steve Jobs at the
mm-hmm.
keynote,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, like the speculation the days before was, will he make an appearance? Will he be there? Will
right.
he watch it? But like,
nope.
I mean, he must have actually been, I mean, on his deathbed at that time.
Right, you know? Right, right.
I mean, whether you're an Apple fan or you're anything but Apple fan, which is just as common,
apparently,
he made a pretty large impact on the computer sphere.
Definitely.
And you know, history will tell whether you know he was a good man or not. But I think no one can argue that he was a great businessman.
Definitely. I mean, you know, with others like Bill Gates, you know, and his
oh yeah,
you know, as his peers, it's like he's from that generation. You know, he invested in Pixar. You know, back before 3D was really a
yep.
thing. And look at them now. It's like he.
Oh yeah.
This is a guy who liked to do technological stuff, not because it made him rich. Well, I'm sure that was a factor,
was,
but I mean, he
that wasn't a drawback.
he really believed in technology and the power of technology, and even if he didn't, you know, look what it does today. Like, have you seen this? In the week since he died, there was this accidental leak, like an internal memorandum from a Google Plus. Programmer or just someone from Google who was like talking about the failings of Google Plus and Google as a culture in general, comparing it to Facebook. But I think this applies equally to Apple. It's like, you know, they with the iPhone, which now has iOS 5 out, they've built this new platform. You know, they sort of redefine what it means to have a phone, and like, you know, everyone else came scrambling to pick up on it. But you know, like the real success of iOS, as it's now come to be known, is that they let everyone else sort of fill in the niches. They don't try and, you know, they try to make a good product that everyone would want to use. But what really makes it great is what everyone else does with it, and that's sort of the power of Apple. Under Steve Jobs' tutelage, which, you know, they weren't doing that kind of thing when he was ousted and gone.
No, they really weren't. They really weren't. I mean, some people will definitely say that under Steve Jobs, the iPhone became a very closed platform, you know, not very open to. But I mean, I think coming from a console gaming perspective, that's kind of how it's always been for consoles. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you want to play anything that's outside of what a company like Nintendo allows, you know, you got to hack. And that's what people do on the iPhone as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Apple and gaming. I know when people hear a topic like that, they're going to think, isn't that a bit of an oxymoron? You know?
Right, right. Because you're thinking of Macintosh, but we're talking about before the Macintosh, before the Apple
exactly.
II even.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, the stereotype is pretty true. I mean, if you're a gamer right now, you should own a PC probably, you know. And if you are into design and stuff, you should probably have a Mac. And if you, gosh, what is a Linux person? really, into tweaking stuff.
Right, right.
But way before all that, before the computer defined who you are by owning or what table you sit at Starbucks, there was Steve Jobs and another Steve, a Steve that I think is a pretty cool guy, Steve Wozniak.
Yep.
They were friends. They were friends from school. And everybody knows the story of how they built the first Apple computer in Steve's garage.
I don't think everyone knows that, so why don't we regale them with it?
All right. Okay. They were members of the Homebrew Computer Club in, I believe it was Palo Alto, California. I could be wrong there. But they were members of this club because no one had a home computer. The concept of home computer was kind of unique, you know.
Yeah, the only home computers at the time were hobby kits, which is, you know, what they were making, essentially.
Exactly. Because, I mean, computers were things that businesses owned and industries owned.
It took up entire rooms, that kind of thing. They didn't use tubes anymore, thank God, but...
Exactly. But, I mean, it would be like saying that this club was devoted to home elephants, you know what I mean?
How would you get one in there?
Exactly. And everyone would be like, you know... We can't make a smaller elephant, but anyway.
Or can we, so, fools?
So I mean, when you wanted to have a home computer, then I mean, you were basically designing this thing. You had to find a way to get it to display to a monitor, which meant probably soldering things.
Mm-hmm.
And you would choose a RAM chip, and you choose a device for storage. And you'd find a processor, and you'd put it together yourself, and you might be the only one who owns a computer with that type of configuration. And you do, you'd make your own programs on it. Maybe you'd get, you could go and go to a magazine or something, and you'd find code you could type in. Oh, did you ever do that? Did you ever read any of those magazines that had games you could type in?
I was three.
Well, yeah, but like by the. I mean, how long you got rid of the Apple when you were three?
Well, no, but I mean, I don't. I think I was barely in like kindergarten when the NES was a big thing. And we didn't get new stuff. I don't even know if there was new stuff for the Apple II at that point. Really, like we had a bunch of games that I'd play like into the late '80s, but
The Apple II was pretty into the late '80s. There used to be a magazine called Nibble. And basically all it was programs you could type in.
Mm-hmm.
And save them to disk. And then you had, new games and new software. I did that because like the library had Nibble. But I don't know. Right. I don't know why I did it, actually, because the library had software you could check out, too. I really should have cut out the middleman there. I don't know, but I liked figuring out how to program. That's why when I was a kid, I wanted to be a computer programmer.
Oh, okay.
Because I would be doing that all the time. Then when I found out what computer programmers actually do,
right,
I was really disenchanted.
Oh, it didn't deter me. I mean, it was more my dealings with like DOS and the PC, QBasic, things like that got me into programming. And then I remember like reading about loops in like a GW Basic book. And I was like, loops. Who's ever going to use a loop? Oh, silly Sean. Anyway.
But so they made this computer, which was, I mean, it still wasn't a complete computer. Well, you still had to hook up your own, monitor. There wasn't one that was included with the kit, and you had to get your own keyboard. Okay. I guess it was kind of like a Mac Mini in that respect.
Oh, sure, I suppose.
But... it was more complete than anything that had been previously released. And it allowed someone who wasn't like the hardcore hobbyist, but more of a casual hobbyist to, actually own a computer.
Right.
It was a revolution at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They made a bunch of these Apple I's, and then, with the money from that, they made the Apple II, which really you just needed to hook a monitor to it. That was a complete computer.
Oh yeah, as legend has it, Steve Wozniak basically built the first floppy drive in his garage there. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and like he didn't even really know how a floppy drive really worked. He just kind of you know, he saw the, you know, there was a Sony drive or whatever, and he saw that, and he's like, ah, no, I'll do it this way. And I mean, that predates Apple, that Wozniak kind of, I don't know, like, I don't know, he has a beautiful mind. But
he's a cobbler. He cobbles.
But what happened before, and this is related to gaming, was, you know the game Breakout?
Oh, definitely. Who doesn't?
You know, which sponsored many, like, things like Arkanoid and things like that.
Mm.
But the original Breakout game was being developed by Atari, and Steve Jobs was working at Atari at the time.
Oh, really?
Steve Wozniak was not. He was working for Hewlett-Packard.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah, which is probably one of Apple's main rivals right now.
Sure. Well, you know, that's when they merged with the Compaq to actually get in the computer industry, because they were just printers before, right?
Yeah. Well, they were no, I mean, the calculators and, you know, there were all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, but computers, come on.
Yeah, yeah. but anyway, so Apple had given Steve Jobs this assignment to make Breakout using, this is for an arcade cabinet, of course. This is before Atari had a home system. The schematics were given for the game, you know, what it should be involved and things like that. They didn't invent Breakout.
Okay, right.
But they were told that they needed to make it with, like, as few chips as possible to save money.
Uh-huh.
And you know, they wanted to drive it, and they said for each chip they could remove from the machining process, you know, they'd get, like, it was like $1,000 or something.
Wow.
Or, you know, so I mean, it's hundreds of chips, but, you know, Atari was thinking they'd reduce it by like 10 or 12 or something.
Right.
Or is it $500? So I have to look up these numbers, but anyway, the overall story goes that Steve Wozniak removed like 100 chips or something.
Wow. Like,
or some, you know, some big number like that. Again, sorry that these numbers will. I'll link to the actual story. I read it in a book called Game Over, which is a really, really comprehensive book on the early days of gaming. Like, it stops at the PlayStation.
Okay. Right.
But it's like a 600-page book. It's a tome.
No kidding. Wow. Kind of like fourth Harry Potter book I'm almost done with.
but like Steve Wozniak did this like in a couple days,
nice. Whatever,
and presented it to Atari, and Atari got it, and it was a working thing, but they couldn't actually replicate what he did.
Ah, what?
So in the end, they went back to a much more multi-chip design, because his way of doing it was so convoluted,
mm-hmm.
that it was actually really, really hard to put to machine. And Steve Wozniak, kind of great guy, smart guy, not the business mind. As legend goes, Steve Jobs never actually told him that there was this money involved for reducing the number of chips.
Oh, dear.
It was just more of a challenge for him.
Right, yeah. Like I said, he's a tinker and a cobbler, so.
Yep. Exactly. But, well, I mean, that relates to games right there, but how it relates to the Apple II and how it relates to that sound that's in Castle Smurfenstein is actually this process. When they were designing the Apple II, they wanted a Breakout on the system.
Nice.
So they decided that, I mean, they basically made a new version of BASIC.
Mm.
Called Integer BASIC, which they referred to as Game BASIC. And the Breakout game was their proof of concept. Nice. You know, their because, and it was included with every original Apple II, and they also included paddles to play it.
Right. I remember those paddles being used in many, many, many different games.
Yeah.
Very much like Atari paddles, except I think it had two buttons.
Yeah, I think so too. I bought mine later in, so I never got the paddles, because they were only included like with the first systems.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I do remember playing the Breakout game. It was called Little Breakout, because they couldn't have the Breakout name.
Oh, okay.
But because they wanted to have this game on, it they decided to design color graphics circuitry. And the slightly more advanced than PC speaker, like, blips and blops of the sound system. And because the sound system was a little better than that, it did allow the digitized speech in some of the games. I remember, did you have Ghostbusters?
Yep.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. Yeah. Hey, I was impressed at the time, but we should link a YouTube video. I saw one recently or whatever of what that sound effect actually sounded like, and I'm like, that's not impressive at all.
No, but at the time.
But it was karaoke for my young mind because I learned all the lyrics to the Ghostbusters song. Because it had the text scroll while the computer was beeping out the music.
Yeah, I would load that game up just to sing along to it.
Yeah, the game that's a game where the title screen actually kind of trumps the game.
I don't know, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I do like the mechanic overall. You're like running the Ghostbusters franchise, you know, and you have to spend all this money to like soup up your car, go around catching ghosts, and you know, if you do it the right way, you always get more money, and if you guys get slammed, you have to run back and get them all healed and stuff. It was a great mechanic, but
it was a sim game early on, yeah.
Very, very interesting. It's also one of those games that got ported a lot. So, like, I have a Master System version. I have an NES version. There's like a Super.
Every version is like really different. So.
Yeah, definitely. So I can't think of any other games that use that sound capability, though.
Well, I mean, Wolfenstein.
Oh, naturally. That's what I mentioned already.
I had a program called Super Sam, which you could type in any message and it would like speak it out.
Oh, that's crazy.
Which we only really did to see what rude words we could make the computer say. But I mean, that's what kids do. And yeah, naturally. I mean, there were sound cards you could buy for better sound. Interestingly enough, some games like the Ultima series, if you bought the sound card, we should link to that too. It's amazing music, like amazing epic music that was generated from the Apple II. But I can only imagine at the time like 10-15 people actually had the hardware needed to actually it's like something that's built. I had the Ultima games on my computer, but I heard their music like beep beep burp, burp, beep burp, you know. I'm like, this is not epic. But I mean, apparently if you had the money and the sound hardware, you could get, was it 8-channel sound? I don't know. It was really...
Wow.
Yeah, we'll link to that too, because when you listen to it, you're like, there's no way they did that at that time. But, I mean, most people just had the hardware off the shelf, you know?
Yeah. Well, even, you know, the hardware off the shelf was really revolutionary for the time, because, you know, as you mentioned during the N64 stuff, you know, the way you played games with the home console system was with cartridges. And so that story about, you know, Steve Jobs having to reduce the number of dies on the board, you know, was like, you know, that's exactly the kind of thing to deal with. And they had a floppy drive to deal with that problem, you know. So it's no surprise that Nintendo, not too much later, decided, well, why don't we put our games on this medium too? And they probably wound up with the exact same problem that Apple had, you know, with people copying their stuff. But I mean, you know, it's like write this system, you know, make sure it works. You have to write an operating system. You had to write that you know, their integer basic programming language to use it. You know, they developed, you know, a easily replicatable computer system for home use. I mean, they're like the Henry Fords of the computer industry, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, it inspired – there was a gold rush after that.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody wanted their Apple II. You know, Atari – this changed Atari, too. Actually, Atari might still be a competitive force today in the home console market had they not tried to shift all their fortunes into making a computer system.
Sure.
Because during when the video game crash happened, they're like, "Oh, it's never coming back. Computers, go computers now." You know,
right.
That's why when the 7800 was developed back in 83, but it didn't come out till 87.
Oh wow! Yikes. Yeah, and by then, you know, because, like, you know, so much technology had moved in leaps and bounds around them. Yeah.
Well, exactly, because they were like, oh, home consoles, scrap that, make computers. And then it's like, oh, Nintendo's really successful, the home console. Bring that home console out. But it was old by that point.
I think there are like four versions of the SG-1000 by that point. Like Sega released one every year. Oh, it's crazy.
But, you know, everybody was trying to make a computer, though, that you could use at the home. I mean, look at the Famicom. It's called the Family Computer.
Yep.
And it had that keyboard attachment with its own version of a game-making basic. But I'm not saying that it was inspired directly by the Apple II, but the Apple II really did lead the, like, a computer you can own in your home, or more so the schools. I think every school had Apple IIs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were really smart about that, because didn't they give them, like, crazy discounts just to get computers into the schools? And that happened, you know, through the Mac era.
Yep. Apple gave it, they still do, actually. I'm a teacher, so I can get an educational discount if I buy Apple computers.
Wow.
Yeah. Or if you're a student, like a college student, you can go on their store and go to the education store. You enter in your school details, and you save about 10%.
That's crazy.
I mean, they still do that. And Apple's, that's really, I mean, that's one area where Apple computers still, you see them, you know, in like design areas in schools. But I mean, school computer labs now aren't the Apple II labs that they were when I was a student, you know. That's where I played Oregon Trail. And
Man,
I think that's the best educational game ever made, because they will never replicate it. I mean, you play educational games today and you can do a lot of the stuff, but you can't die of dysentery. And of course, like every other kid, I'm like, you've died of dysentery. What's dysentery? And you look it up and it's like, awesome. Yeah.
Who would do this to me?
Yes.
Well, this
you shoot buffalo and stuff. I mean, it's a really, really awesome game.
This is so crazy to me, because, you know, now you have like the iPhone and all the related iOS devices that exist now. And, you know, when it first came out, I was really skeptical, but all these other phone developers just like started falling all over themselves to jump on this bandwagon. You know, you had like Google developing the Android operating system, and, you know, basically having the same response to Apple that, you know, the IBM had, except, you know, Apple keeps a very tight control over its property. You know, its hardware and software just kind of go together. Whereas, you know, these other companies have to do, you know, clones essentially just to keep pace. So there's like gajillions of different kinds of Androids out there, but there's only one Apple, there's only one iPhone. And it's worldwide. Like I've been around the world this year, you know, granted just first world countries, but I was in like, you know, England and Scotland and France and Japan throughout the course of this year. And everywhere I went, I saw iPhones all over the place. It was ridiculous. And they had white iPhones before that we even had them here. What's up with that? Actually, I think we still have a white iPhone. We have a white iPod Touch. But, you know, they weren't always the king of the hill. There were missteps like Pippin, Lisa.
Oh, yeah. We should go through the darker days. And that's the thing. Apple has been known to be kind of an innovator, but sometimes they introduce something and everyone goes, wow, that's a great idea. And other companies run with it more than Apple did. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. You know, it's one company versus tons and tons of companies. That's why, you know, there's a new Android smartphone out every week.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And again, no knock to that. It keeps, you know, competition is what drives this industry.
Oh, definitely.
So Steve Jobs was kicked out of Apple in 1985.
What?
Does that surprise you?
Well, I mean, you know, given his temperament, maybe not. I'm not really sure. You know, I knew this, actually, but I just don't know why exactly it happened.
Well, there's competing theories. He was getting, like, there were different divisions of the company, definitely. There was, like, the people working on the Lisa and the people working on the Macintosh. That was Steve Jobs' division, the Macintosh.
Right.
And, you know, there was still the very profitable Apple II division. I guess, the rumors are probably right. Steve Jobs was probably a hard person to work for, because he was this total perfectionist. And he did not tolerate anything but. And I think he was just too young for the job he was put in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because you know, like Bill Gates, who's also difficult to work for. Yeah. You know, they were young guys. Like, you know, they're both college dropouts. You know, and why would you want to go to college when you're making millions of dollars heading up your own company?
So let me think if I. So he was like in his mid 20s when he was like in charge of like one of the biggest computer companies in the world.
Yeah.
But anyway, the shareholders are the board members. They booted him out.
Right, right.
Because they felt that they'd be more comfortable getting an experienced businessman. And who they got was a John Shully? Scully? I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but he was the former CEO of Pepsi.
Oh. Yeah, because, you know, making sugar water and making computers are pretty similar. I can understand that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's basically what they said. And they figured he'd be a more capable businessman.
Sure, why not?
I mean, Steve Jobs clashed with a lot of things. You know the iconic 1984 ad that launched Macintosh?
Mm-hmm.
We should link that too.
Yep.
Apple in general was totally against that.
Oh, really?
They thought it was a waste of money and that nobody would get it.
Are you kidding?
But you know, it was the Steves were like really in favor of it. And it became like probably one of the best known ads ever made, even though it only aired once.
Right, right. Wow.
But I mean, that was brilliant to make an ad that only aired once, but then all the networks and local news and, you know, they all picked it up and they ran it again. They didn't have to pay money for the other times it was run.
Absolutely brilliant.
That's Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott made that ad.
Oh, yeah. It looks like his style. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. So Jobs was kicked out in 1985, so that's about a year after the Macintosh was released.
Mm.
Woz stayed on with Apple until 1987,
okay.
But he was in a very diminished capacity because he'd had an airplane crash.
Oh,
a few years earlier that had left him like bedridden for a number of months.
Wow!
During that time, he'd found console gaming. And I say that in the same way that I might say, like, someone found Jesus, you know, because because Woz became, like, this champion Nintendo gamer. I mean, during his bed rest, he was playing probably, I'm guessing, the Atari, 2600 type thing.
That's crazy.
But it continued on, and, like, apparently he would submit so many high scores to – we'll get back to Nintendo Power now.
Yeah.
That the magazine we talked about. They always had the high score section where you could take a picture of your screen,
mm-hmm,
and send it to Nintendo Power. Oh, my gosh. That sounds so low tech now.
It looks shopped. I can see the pixels.
I know. But there was no shopping there. The only shopping you could do is maybe with a Sharpie or something.
Yeah, right. Six.
But, yeah.
No one will ever know.
I'm going to turn these ones into nines. But he'd submitted so many scores to Nintendo Power that this is, as legend goes, they started refusing to print his scores because he was like taking up too many of the spots.
Oh.
So he started submitting scores with like anagrams of his name.
Oh, that's funny.
And I guess he was like he was like the top Tetris champion.
Wow. Wow, really?
I guess. And there's pictures of him in a Nintendo Power like playing Tetris. I
wonder if I even had it that time. I should see if I have the issue. Huh.
Apparently from 89, I think.
Oh, could
so.
Be. Could be.
Yeah,
I probably wouldn't have realized it was him because I didn't know his name at the time.
No, no. And I don't think it was ever mentioned in this. This is the guy that made the Apple II.
Right. This is some guy that keeps harassing us. We're going to put him on our magazine and leave us alone.
It's probably like, this guy is 10 years older than our normal readership. You know?
Yeah.
But Apple changed a lot after those two guys left.
I'm sure.
They focused on the Macintosh line. They released another Apple computer in the Apple II line. My personal favorite. This is my growing up computer. This is the Apple IIgs.
Oh, okay.
the GS. No, no, that sounds familiar. If you think of like the iPhone 3GS.
Oh yeah.
But, yeah, the circle. Apple 2GS, and the G stood for graphics, and the S stood for sound.
Okay. Okay.
This was a computer that had much better graphics. The graphics were not quite to the level, but they were meant to be like Amiga-like graphics, because Amiga really was the graphic computer at the time. And the sound kind of blew everything away. It was a Sony produced processor. Ah, are we seeing connections now?
Oh, what?
Or am I mixing my? It was called the Equinox? Ensoniq? I'll have to look that up. But actually, there's a lot of parallels between the Apple II GS and the Super Nintendo. Yeah. Super Nintendo. They used essentially the same processor.
So speaking of Apple, is that an Apple ringtone that I hear?
Yeah, okay.
For an iPhone?
yes, that is what it is. But yeah, they were using the basically the same speed processor as the Super Nintendo.
Gotcha.
You know, I read this, and I need to find someone to verify it, because I mean, it was on Wikipedia, and I've seen it a couple other places. But they're saying that the Apple II GS could be used as a dev kit for Super Nintendo games.
Oh, really?
Now, I don't know if I totally believe that, because I think the Super Nintendo had a more extensive color palette.
Okay, right.
I mean,
I suppose
as a testing thing, if they have similar processors and sound, you know, it could work. But I don't know. I always see a dev kit as being a more advanced piece of kit.
Mm-hmm.
I will link to this amazing iPhone, and I think now they finally have an Android version. It's a kind of Apple II GS emulator for the iPhone.
Oh, wow.
It's only, I mean, you can't load your own software onto it. It's this one company this French company called the FTA, who were big in the demo scene. And who made a bunch of games. They ported Space Harrier to the Apple II GS, which is an amazing feat. You know, just as a proof of concept.
I don't know how amazing that is, because it didn't look that great on the Sega Master System as our Sega Scope 3D special will show.
Well, yeah. But just as a proof of concept. But anyway,
actually, no, I saw that video. It actually looks better than the Master System version.
Oh yeah, yeah. So we'll link to that, and we'll also link to a site where you can play a lot of these games.
I hope you're keeping track of these links, because I'm sure not.
Ooh, well, we're gonna have to. I think I can keep track of the ones I said.
Okay.
Apple and gaming. Those were pretty good days. Once Jobs and Wozniak left, Apple went Macintosh only. That's when it developed its reputation as not really having any games.
Yeah.
The only company that was making really good Mac exclusives, I mean, there were a couple companies, but I mean, the one we know is Bungie.
Uh-huh.
Who was making the Marathon series, which, and later, you know, Halo started off as it was going to be a Mac exclusive.
I was going to say, because it was supposed to be the Halo shoot.
Halo Wars or something.
Yeah, thank you.
And I mean, they had experience in that genre as well, because they did the Myth series, which was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that didn't work as an Apple exclusive so well when they were bought by Microsoft.
Yeah. Oh,
that's got to be one of the craziest acquisitions. All the Mac gamers were like, yeah, Halo, in your face, PC users. Oh, Microsoft bought it. that's really, really crazy. That would be like Apple acquiring bananas.
Well, it's so funny to me because Even now, you know, Macs aren't really known for gaming, even though Jobs came back. And we have the iPhone now, which isn't really known for, you know, heavy-duty hardcore gaming, but people play a lot of really popular games in them, you know, like Angry Birds. I'm actually wearing the Angry Birds shirt right now that we got from those developers at TGS. So it's funny how, like, this new, very much, you know, Steve Jobs, Apple-minded platform is now this like hotbed for mobile gaming, You know, whereas the Macintosh is still, you know, foundering.
It's gotten better recently now that they got Steam. But yeah, it's still late ports and things like that. It's like once this game has been released on every appliance and console and everything, then we'll port it to Mac.
Yeah, yeah.
But I guess I don't want to talk too much about this because it's really a topic in its own right. But it would be a criminal to not mention the Pippin.
Oh, see, I don't know much about it at all.
Apple decided that they wanted to make this is the non-Jobs era when there was a lot of bloat. They had like the Newton. Remember the Newton?
Oh yeah. It was supposed to be one of those first like handheld pad type things, right? That never really quite took off. And now they have the iPad, so I guess
it
kind of exists.
It was more like hands hold because you had to like hold it with two hands because you're so massive.
Right. But it was like Apple, Newton.
At the time, it was the smallest computer-like device available.
But, sure.
And they had the Pippin, which was a home console developed by Apple. And, well, Apple wanted to license the technology to make consoles, which used basically Mac PowerPC processors and were, you know, very easy to port a Mac game to it. And the licensee they got for it was Bandai, who had had such consoles before it as the Playdia, the Wonder Swan.
The Wonder Swan was good, though.
The Wonder Swan was pretty good. I liked.
Just
the
never
Wonder
released
Swan.
Outside of Japan.
But anyway, the Pippin came out at like $600.
Oh, sounds come kind of, on. Sound,
well, I know a certain console that I have in my entertainment center right now that came out at $600.
Yeah, but you know, decades later, right? Unless you're not talking about the PS3.
I am talking about the PS3, But it was a computer. I mean, it could go on the internet. This is you know, 96. Wow. I think actually it was released a little earlier than that. But I mean, it was revolutionary at the time. It was if you added a keyboard and a mouse to it, you had a computer too.
Oh, I suppose, yeah.
Although slightly underpowered compared to, well, I don't know. Apple stuff has and always will be expensive.
Yeah. Well, that's mostly because they just can charge that much because it's so exclusive.
So during the whole run of these, about 40,000 of them were made over like a two-year period. And most of them in Japan, because Bandai put their own properties on it, Ultraman and Gundam and things like that. So there's some interest there. And apparently the games were not bad. I mean, the fairly good games, just a really flawed thing. And it's so un what now Apple is, which is very sleek and streamlined. And this is so when Steve Jobs came back, and he came back in 98. He killed the Pippin line. He killed the Newton line. He stopped. Okay, Apple doesn't make printers anymore. Apple, he was like, we just make computers, and we just make a couple of computers, and we're gonna get back into the consumer market. You know, that's when they launched the. It looks ugly to me now.
The iMac.
The iMac.
Yeah.
But at the time, I'm like, wow, that's really cool looking.
Yeah, okay, you know, well, part of it is, you know, it's a big old CRT with a handle on it. You know, and I'm just conditioned to not like CRTs anymore. But you know, as a piece of technology, as a piece of, you know, gaming computer archaeology, it's definitely, I like it, and it definitely led to what Apple is today.
Oh, definitely. And I had one at the time, and I remember the commercial for it featured Douglas Adams talking about it. This was really shortly before he passed away. But anyway, they killed that all off. And then they came back and they were making just computers for a number of years. And then they made this. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's an MP3 player. I remember when it was announced, everyone was pretty sure it would be a failure. And I think it did fail. It was called the iPod. That was it. Yeah.
Well, I never bought one because it didn't use solid state technology. Well, you know, because if you drop it, the hard drive can.
I remember this is the wrongest penny arcade has ever been.
Yeah.
Because they when it came on, they were making fun of it. So the Mac geek character that they have came on. And he's like, "Have you seen my new iPod or whatever? This is the future. It doesn't skip or whatever." And they the Penny Arcade guys were like, "Look at this. This is a portable CD player. It cost me only $50." And they're like, "But that'll skip." "No, it won't. It'll be cushioned with all the money I saved." You know, that was their joke, you know.
Right.
And I'm just like, oh my, you would have to be such a tool to be like having a portable CD player hanging from your belt now. You know what I mean?
I know. I'm like just like your like quiver of CDs to go with it. I mean, you can fit exactly. So much stuff in 64 gigabytes now.
Yeah,
like
it's but you know, at the time I laughed though, because I totally agree. I wasn't that big of a Apple fan at the time, and I'm like, God, this is doomed. This is doomed.
Yeah.
But the iPod really kind of led to Apple reemerging as a gaming thing.
Yep. Absolutely.
They released applications for the Click Wheel iPod. I played Crystal Defenders on it.
Wow.
yep. That Final Fantasy spinoff was crazy. For the Click Wheel as a downloadable. But the original iPod, the original black and white one, had a little hidden Easter egg on it. You could go into the menus and you could go and click on something that just said game.
Okay.
And that game was
no
Breakout.
No.
Yep. Like it's all full circle there.
Right. And it's, I guess you could use the click wheel just to run the paddle back and forth, right?
Yep. And I guess it's because I'm such a geek and I'm such a nerd, but when I saw that, I'm like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, look, it's Breakout. And everyone's like, it's Breakout, so Nokia has Snake, you know? And I'm like, no, you don't get it. Apple history, you know, but yeah.
Wow, I learned something today, that's for sure.
So, yeah, that's really interesting. And when the new iPods came out, they had a Vortex, which is a 3D version of Breakout.
No, really?
Yep.
Okay, I just have to get this just for the hell of it,
and I mean that's iPod gaming is another podcast all by itself, so we're not going to go into this now. But
everyone should download Bouncing Girl.
I'm not exactly sure how that relates. I don't know if that's the pinnacle of iPhone gaming, but
I think it's pretty great.
But yeah, everybody should download.
By the way, you're welcome. You know who you are.
Yeah.
All 10 downloads he gets now.
So did you have any anything else? Apple gaming?
No, I think that's good. I think there always is a lot more to say, and I'm sure
we'll find
a lot more to say. I think that the parallels between Apple and Nintendo in particular are pretty interesting, and they became really apparent when like the Wii came out. But, you know, just their mentalities, their sort of closed platform solutions, and how much that bites them in the you-know-what over time, and they have their ups and downs. And, like, Apple's very much on an up. Nintendo seems like it might be on a down right now. But, you know, they both gave so much to their respective fields. And they were definitely leaders in a lot of places where others followed and then fell behind where others figured things out before they did, so...
It's going to be a sad day when Miyamoto passes away.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know. That's the thing is no other industry I think right now. Maybe film, but like that you can think of these pioneers, these like living legends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, just to Steve Jobs, rest in peace, man. Thanks for everything. I never knew you. I never emailed you, but in many ways, you've changed how I do things and the overall atmosphere of computers in general. So rest in peace, Steve Jobs.
Maybe we should call this one a pour one out, a little bit of apple juice. I don't know.
Oh, Sean.
If you're not totally offended by that, you guys can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, famicomdojo.tv. Yeah,
and if you'd like to tell us how much that apples totally suck and that we should be rocking PCs right now, yep. Linux boxes, yep. Or perhaps Amigas, yep. if you're really retro, or the FM Town Smarty, please leave us a comment.
Hot sauce.
Hot sauce. Okay, I think that one's in the can.
Yeah.